All right. Welcome to Lowest Common Phenomenator. How's everybody doing?
Fantastic. I'm your host, Vanessa Gritton.
Hey, yes, and I'm your other host, Olivia Haidar. Yeah, this is another swell intro. We're really bad at the intros.
Oh, so am I. Don't you worry.
We just, every time we're like, okay, we've got an idea this time. And then no one sticks to the plan.
Honestly, I'm suspicious of people who are good at intros.
You know, it's a weird skill. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
They're total sociopaths. And if you read the title of this episode, you know we have a special guest. And that is the voice of our special guest today, David Bell.
Yeah.
Hi.
Best bad movie ever.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. And we are a podcast that we're talking about the top 10 highest grossing films of the year per year, starting in 1975. The birth of the blockbuster, Jaws. We're kind of going through the years, seeing how it goes. And we had a reel up with 3 Days of the Condor last week. And we're coming back down to our normal groove for 1975 of just like weird, off-putting, and slightly racist comedies, which has been really our mill for the last.
We had Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yeah,
we had,
which was not racist to be fair.
Yeah, we had the Oscar just bait.
Incredibly boring. Have you seen Apple Dumpling?
No,
Gang?
No, I don't know what that is.
The Apple Dumpling Gang. It was a kids movie from 1975.
Yeah. Adorable orphans.
Yeah, orphans and like a rascally gambler who adopts them, who's played by Bill Bixby
of the
Incredible Hulk fame.
And then Don Knotts keeps trying to ruin
it. Yeah, Don Knotts and Tim Conway.
Don Knotts. That sounds just like the worst.
You know what? It pretty much was.
Okay.
It was.
You sounded like you were going to say one redeemable thing about it.
It was the worst thing about it was just that it was boring, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like other, it wasn't like offensive or hard to watch. It was just like, oh, this is not interesting in any way, shape, or form.
See, sometimes that's the worst though, is when you have to like force yourself to watch.
Yeah.
Or you have to watch it a few times, or you have to like rewind every now and then. And just like, okay, focus.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride. Starting with that it's a really great way to start off both a mini series and a whole new phase for a podcast. It's really engaging. It brings people in for the new for the new run. Real fun. But now, this week, we're going back to the comedy well.
With Return of the Pink Panther.
We're talking about the Return of the Pink Panther.
Which has nothing to do with the cartoon.
Well, it kind of does.
What came first?
The original Pink Panther movie came first.
Okay.
That's where it all came from, because it had like that animated panther at the opening credits and the ending credits, and that's where the whole cartoon came from. It's just this totally unrelated panther.
Do we know why the animated panther is in any relation to what we're seeing?
He's like the Pixar lamp of this movie series.
Okay.
it is really like, it's this very specific idea of starting a goofy comedy with like a literal cartoon.
Right. I remember when they used to do that.
Yeah. But like it does have very little to do. It's he's only a Pink Panther because they decided to call the big famous diamond that is in several of these movies the Pink Panther.
Right. And having not watched any of the other movies, or at least I don't think so. I might have watched them as a kid. My first question was like, okay, what is this Pink Panther gonna be?
Right.
Because I know just Pink Panther.
Of course.
I knew that it wasn't quite Peter Sellers, so I was like, how does this two things relate? And it's a diamond.
It is. Yep. It is a diamond. And trying to figure out how these two things relate is really the running theme for this entire movie, at least for me, where this is a thing, and it is kind of pulling over from the original Pink Panther, which I believe is from 1968, which is just like, it's a comedic diamond heist movie, and it doesn't. It's just like this big famous diamond is stolen, and then Peter Sellers as Inspector Clouseau is brought in to save it. And it's mostly about the diamond thief, who we see, who has been now replaced with Christopher Plummer, in this new one, and
who leaves a fancy glove as a calling card,
right? And it's mostly following him, but like Clouseau was really the breakout character. He was the guy who, like, everyone was like, this Peter Sellers is great. And Peter Sellers is great. like a legend.
Yeah, this I think this movie would have been incredibly boring without him.
Oh, absolutely. I would. There would have been little to no redeeming value of anything in this movie without him. But he is an incredible physical presence.
Yeah, and so basically we start from towards the end of the first movie where essentially if you're watching at home and you haven't seen the first one, imagine if this was the Galifianakis of the first movie that's now the lead character.
Yeah.
Where we the little side guy is now the lead guy.
Yeah, the Pink Panther is really exactly like the Hangover series.
It's exactly like the Hangover
series. In most ways.
In every single way. They're the same movie, and they've ripped each other off, clearly.
Yes.
No. But it takes from the first movie, where now we see the inspector, who's been downgraded to beat cop after we realize someone has once again stolen the Pink Panther diamond.
Right. Yeah. That's how it opens with this little art heist scene. You get a little background on the Pink Panther diamond.
Yeah.
It's set in a fictional... Middle Eastern,
I don't know,
like Turkey, it's kind of like the Middle East, it's very vague.
The whole thing's bookended by someone telling the story, right?
Right, yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, and that is pretty much the same story as like it was in the original movie.
Okay.
But again, the whole idea is it's just like a comedic set. It's not supposed to be like super serious or
of the era. It makes sense that it's being bookended by somebody telling the story because it's not like physical media was readily available
to catch
up on what happened in the first one. If you look at anything from 1975 up until like physical media was more prevalent, anytime you have a sequel, there's always someone at the beginning recapping because there's no way for someone to go back.
Right,
and
they're
look at
never going
to
assume that you've seen the previous one.
Exactly. Yeah,
there's no way to unless there's some kind of re-release for it.
Which I found very helpful because I hadn't seen any of the
Exactly. So. And I honestly don't think you would have need to have seen the original one to be able to follow anything that happened.
At no point was I lost.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward narrative, even if it is so weirdly designed where it is basically two movies happening simultaneously.
Yeah, for sure.
You've got this goofy Clouseau stuff, but he very quickly goes off on his whole other side adventure where he's like very clumsily trying to like follow Christopher Plummer's wife.
I loved her, by the way.
She's great.
Because she just keeps cracking up at him.
Yeah.
Because not for a second does she believe anything, any of his disguises or anything.
Right.
And I thought that was a really good bit, just her constantly laughing at him.
Yeah. And he is like, he is a fool.
Yeah. Well, it's the Naked Gun before the Naked Gun, it felt like. It's a series of bits. He goes into a room, he does a series of bits,
especially,
and they either work or they don't.
Right. And that's what's so odd is like, because then it's like, you've got that, which is literally, there's no plot there. It's just like an excuse for Peter Sellers to do funny things.
Yeah.
And then you've got Christopher Plummer, who is like in this almost Indiana Jones type like art, like jewel heist thing where he's like trying to find out who actually stole the diamond and using his underworld connections and that sort of thing.
That was the most I got lost watching this movie, is the fact that it was two movies. I didn't accept that at first. So I'm like, how are these two things related to each other? And I got confused when I was just like, am I supposed to know how we got to this moment?
Right. Yes.
And it's just kind of cutting between Christopher Plummer and what's his name?
Clouseau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So up around this top, where we have Clouseau going back into his detective work, despite the fact that his chief, who hates him to the point of obsession, has to reinstate him.
That's a wild character.
That must have been set up in a previous movie, right?
It's vaguely.
Barely.
Okay.
Vaguely.
Because I was like, why is this guy the villain?
So what's so interesting, again, because in the first film, it's pretty much just Clouseau and Litton, the art thief, and it's a two-hander. And then
he's just kind of stressing out the chief?
Well, no, there's no chief. It's literally just all on in situ.
Yeah.
Like, it's all taking place there, like, where the diamond is stolen. And then in the sequel, they bring in all of this baggage around Clouseau, like the chief and the chief's assistant and all this stuff. And they've got this very clear, like, comedic dynamic. Mm-hmm. And then in this one, they decide, well, we're gonna let this guy absolutely lose his mind throughout the course of this movie.
Yeah, he doesn't even. Like, he starts unhinged.
No. Yes.
He starts at a 10.
Yeah, he starts at attempted homicide.
Yes, yeah. And like...
It's a very 1975 kind of humor. Where it's what if he just really wanted to kill this guy?
Yeah, because he has the, like... that's, like, an early gag is the switcheroo with the lighter that looks like a gun, but gun that's actually a gun. It's like... he really does just want to kill Clouseau. Yeah. And you know what, though? Like, I kind of get it.
Yeah, I mean...
Clouseau's a fucking moron. And also an asshole.
Yeah.
Like...
No, it's one of those characters that it's like, we like watching him, but we would never want to, like, actually know this person.
Absolutely not.
Dave, how did you feel about the Kato scene?
Oh, boy.
The mildly, or not even mildly racist, the racist. I like the bit of Kato. I like the idea of Kato.
Yeah.
Of the, there's a guy who jumps me every now and then.
Right, yeah.
That's funny.
I like that idea, and I'd like to hire someone to fight me every once in a while.
And
And
I would say that I do think one of the funniest parts of the movie is... when they're fighting and they do the slow-mo thing as he's flying into the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you cut to, like, he's in slow-mo, and then when you cut to the neighbor next door hearing it all, and she's hearing his scream in slow motion. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, the Kato, though.
In terms of him, I forget what he refers to him of.
He keeps calling him his yellow-skinned
friend. Yellow-skinned friend.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It is... old school racist. Like,
yeah,
wow.
I mean, as a white guy who's clearly an authority on what's racist, I thought it it seemed like he was kind of the bad guy, like Clouseau. Like, I didn't like him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So him being racist, like, it wasn't like, oh, you're ruining this protagonist for me. It was like, yeah, he's racist. That makes sense. But, like, at no point did I like him.
Right. No, true.
I mean, obviously that wasn't the point in this movie because it's just 70s racism supposed to like him.
Yeah, I do think he's supposed to be likable.
He's supposed to be the protagonist.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, he's a weird racist dude.
He really, and they don't play it as racist at all. Like, it's not they don't linger on it as like, oh, you shouldn't have said that.
Right.
It's the 70s. It's 1975.
Like, is he the only person, and I'm just trying to remember, who is, like, terribly racist in this movie? Because one thing I will say is I expected it to be more racist because it's a comedy in the 70s.
And it does take place in the Middle East, so I was really bracing myself.
Like, that's what was weird about it, is that the character seemed racist.
Right.
The movie around him didn't.
No.
I might be just completely missing something obvious.
There are no people of color in the movie besides Kato.
Right.
So there's no one to be racist to.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no target.
Right.
It's all white people, even in the Middle East. Like, there's no people of color in the Middle East.
That might be the only argument I've ever heard for a lack of representation.
Yeah, it's like, you don't want to be in this, because if you are, you are going to get, like, 1950s racism hurled at you.
Like, or it's like, of course Friends had an all-white cast. Do you know what would have happened if we put someone else in it?
Right, it would have been a disaster.
Oh my god. It is good, though, that the Kato stuff is at least a small portion of the movie at the beginning and the end.
But it is, like, the movie is racist in the fact that it's the protagonist and he's being racist we're supposed to still like him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, it was really shocking, actually. Like, which is interesting because, I mean, I guess that's progression because wouldn't be shocking to anyone else, like, for a long time after this time. So, that's good.
Yeah.
At least that's a bright ray of sunshine is that it is old fashioned.
But the actor who played Kato was great. I mean, the gag, the idea of that character is
the comedic gag is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's also funny that they named him Kato, like Green Hornet's bodyguard.
Yeah.
I thought that was 100% on purpose.
You think that's on purpose?
I'm going to say around the 70s, we gave every single ethnicity one name that they always had.
Yeah.
Every Asian guy was Cato. every Mexican guy was Juan or Jose.
Yeah.
Or Panchito.
Well, because they're not like treated as people.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not allowed to be fully rounded human beings.
Right. This movie gets away with it more because I would argue that most of the characters aren't people because it's like a parody film.
Oh, absolutely.
So everybody's sort of a caricature.
Yeah. There are no characters in this movie. There are just 2D cutouts that float around.
This movie is what happens when everyone has a lot of really funny bits and they may have like come from like sketchy style.
Right.
Like, not like sketchy, sketch style backgrounds before. So they don't know how to put a plot together, but they know how to string jokes together.
Yeah. And the jokes will have like, whether or not you like them, they'll have beginning, middles, and ends. Like the vacuum cleaner bit where he sucks up the bird and then later the bird gets shooting out and like the light bulb that keeps popping up then later blows their cover.
Yeah. I did find some satisfaction during the comedic set pieces of like, they take their time laying out the groundwork of all of the elements of the comedic scene that's about to happen.
Yeah.
Which is really nice and refreshing. You know, it's not just a bunch of jokes, like written jokes back and forth. It's like, you know, he's coming in with, like with the scene with the bird and everything. Like, he's coming into the room and they're setting up this giant vacuum machine and he's got his fake mustache on and,
It's that dated comedy stuff. Like, I was worried because I grew up on The Naked Gun, and I recognize the idea of if someone watched that now who hadn't seen it before, there'd probably be a lot that didn't work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love those movies.
But yeah.
They also have that, like, the third one has that, it ends with a classic Hollywood transphobic gag.
Right.
Yeah.
With Anna Nicole Smith, right? Yeah, like, which is
really offensive.
Yeah.
But, like, there's still good stuff in those movies, but
yeah, and it again, it's it's very dated in the sense that like I see O.J. Simpson, I'm like, oh, he just makes me laugh. Like, I can't help but to feel
nice
that from those movies.
Yeah.
And I assumed there was going to be a lot of that watching this, so since I had no nostalgia for it, I was going to have to take it at face value, and there was going to be a lot of jokes that I'm sure people when they were kids really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And there was that. There were gags that I was like, this isn't doing anything for me. But there were some that I liked.
Yeah.
The sauna slippery floor.
Yes.
Like, it's a nice, simple bit.
Yeah.
But it was, I found it delightful.
Well, and Peter Sellers is, again, such an incredible physical performer.
Oh, yeah.
All of his pratfalls are very funny and really well done. And they're silly and stupid, and they don't have anything to do with anything that's happening in the movie. But it's a joy to watch them.
Oh, yeah. He's a pro.
He really is. I'm such a Peter Sellers fan.
That's the thing, is I love him in, like, Doctor Strangelove. Yeah. I love being there.
Oh, totally, yes.
And it's weird that I haven't watched these movies, and I realize I should probably go back and watch them.
They're interesting. And, like, the whole series is very strange because this is like his return to the role, because they'd made a third movie that was just called Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah, he wasn't it, right?
Yeah, no, that's the one that he's not in. They replace him with an American, I think. And I can't remember who they replaced him with, but it was not good. Did not work.
Yeah, I was looking into the making of this movie, and apparently there wasn't much demand for this.
No. Yeah, it's pretty much just one guy pushing it uphill.
Yeah, and they've made like 10 of these fucking things, and like, at one point they did one that after Peter Sellers had died using just old footage of him.
Yeah.
And it was not like he died while filming.
No.
He died and they're like, you know what we should do? We should make a whole movie still with him in it, even though he's dead.
Absolutely.
Why would you do that?
It's really, it's one of the most bizarre, like, pieces of film that you could ever watch.
I'm definitely going to have to watch that.
Yeah, that's the one. I think it's called, like, Where's Clouseau or something. And that's pretty much all that happens throughout the entire movie, is they're like, where's Clouseau? And then they'll just cut to some random footage.
I heard it's, like, Ed Wood level. Like, it's it's like they, at some points, have doubles that are just obviously doubles.
Right, yeah. It's really bizarre.
My mother doesn't understand when a bad movie is bad. Like, she thinks every movie that exists is great.
I want to live in that world.
Every movie she watches, she adores and thinks it's great, even though you could be watching the worst movie you've ever seen.
Sure.
And in a not even fun way. She watched Where's Clouseau,
Yeah.
And was so upset that she felt robbed of her time.
Wow.
I think that is the first time she's ever not liked a movie before.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that broke her brain and made her realize she cannot have fun watching something. This is a woman who watched The Lake House and, like, cried the whole time.
Yeah.
Adore.
Keanu.
Was so bummed at the end of Where's Clouseau, where she's just like, where's my fucking time?
Ugh. Oh, I have to watch this. I mean, it's, you can't. Making a comedy when the main character is dead and everybody knows he's dead when it comes out, it's just anti-comedy from the start.
Truly, truly, one of the most hideous Hollywood business decisions that has ever been made.
I mean, we're still doing it. Rogue One. I saw Rogue One in theaters, the Carrie Fisher scene, and I walked out and looked at my phone and learned she had died right there and then.
Oh,
and
God.
It was just like, Jesus, this is.
Yeah,
like
that's
it was. They just got to stop doing that.
Yeah, poor Carrie Fisher. That scene's very odd. That movie is also pretty odd. Yeah. Pretty lumpy movie.
It's got its lumps. So in the Pink Panther, where we are now, Christopher.
Oh, we're talking about
bringing
the Pink
us
Panther?
Back to the Pink Panther. Christopher Plummer starts to realize that he has been framed.
Right. Yeah. He goes to the to Lugash, I think is the name of the country, right?
Yes. I think Lugash is the fake country. I think there's one where it's it's two letters and then a bunch of vowels, and I think that's the real one, and I hate that I can't remember the real one.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. He's in Switzerland. That's where Clouseau is. He's in Good task or something.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
See, the real one we can't remember.
Yeah, you know.
That's the real place.
But it's
Lugash is the fake place.
Yeah, Lugash is the fake country. And yeah, he's just having like a little white guy Middle Eastern adventure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, one of those.
He's in his white linen suit and just like and being Christopher Plummer. I will say, Christopher Plummer. Looking like a snack in this movie.
Absolutely.
Looking real good.
Yeah, I don't know much of his early career, but watching this, I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I see why he's like everybody. I mean, I still love him as old Christopher Plummer, but.
Yeah. And what's funny about this movie is he had to come in last minute because he's digitally replacing Kevin Spacey. Mm. That would have worked better if I had if I had actually like thought about it.
That's worked fine.
You know,
who
is he? He is replacing a guy, though. Who's the guy he's replacing?
Wrong thing on the soundboard. His name is
David Niven, I believe.
I knew the name when I.
Who was a British character actor who, he portrayed Charles Lytton in the original Pink Panther. And Christopher Plummer is replacing him. That's because that's what Christopher Plummer does. That's his wheelhouse now. He just replaces other people.
Yeah.
And what was his? Did you know his name?
I couldn't pull it up for some reason. It just kept showing me the same part of the Pink Panther with the guy that plays that associate that later comes up, the fat man.
Well,
that's
I
not
think,
me. Describe that's
yeah,
what he calls
that
himself.
Is the character's name. Yeah, it was David Niven. I was right. He meets the fat man who is, I guess, you know, that's his character. And he's like a shady underworld dealer in the Middle East.
Yeah.
This stuff is just kind of, it's never super clear.
He's
it's just like
based off of that one character in Casablanca, underworld, I have my connections and everything guy that ends up buying the Casablanca from Rick.
Yeah, it's a pretty stock, like it's again like the criminal underlord who works in this area.
Yeah.
And he sends him back to his hotel room. He like has this whole chase scene. There's like lots of little action scenes in this section that aren't like, you know, that aren't super engaging.
I mean, this isn't an action movie.
No, not at all. It's only kind of a comedy.
Yeah.
Like half of it.
Sometimes a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was, I won't say this is a hard watch, but it is like, if the bits don't work, it was like, I just wanted to fast forward because
it
was like,
basically it is like, real rocky. Like sometimes there's a funny moment, but it's, in between stretches of just kind of tedium.
That's literally why I have plot pulled up, because the entire time I had to keep being like, right, that jewel thing keeps happening.
Well, yeah. There was something disjointed about the way it was cut together too. Like, there's the part where she drugs him.
Right, yeah.
And he does that weird freeze kissing her hand, which is like, okay, that's cute.
Yeah.
And then the next time we see him, he's taking a bath. And, like, I had thought I missed something.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, you normally show someone waking up or, like, something. But he's, like, taking a bath and, like, acting like whatever, it's all fine. Like, everything's all
right. He just wakes up like that all the time.
All of the scenes are hermetically sealed from each other.
Yeah. And so it's oddly disjointed. And to a certain point, I sort of gave up on, because I understood the tropes.
Right.
But like when the guy at the end, like, takes out the gun, he's going to kill them in the hotel room. I was like, I'm not entirely sure who this guy is.
Oh.
I feel like he was introduced late in the movie.
He was, yeah, he met Christopher Plummer after meeting up with the fat man.
Right.
And Sharky?
His name is Sharky. I love that his name is Sharky. It's a great name.
It is a solid one.
He's the leader of he's like the commander of the secret police in Lugash.
Yeah, there's some great
commander
names.
Commander Sharky.
Sharky, Peppy.
Yeah, Peppy. Mm-hmm. Peppy's like he's like the fat guy's like nervous little partner.
They all sound like Star Fox characters.
Yes. Isn't Peppy actually a Star Fox character?
I think so.
I mean, he's got to be if Slippy is.
Slippy and Peppy. I think I might have been thinking of Slippy.
New challenger approaching. Sharky.
Sharky. Yeah, he's just got a gun. That's his smash attack.
Sharky's got a gun. I'm sorry, that's where I am in this.
No, it's fine. There really is no way to, like, keep up with... Like, the plot is nothing. Like, there's
no, like, villain.
Yeah, there is absolutely no villain, which is a major problem.
Yeah, and there's not really, like... It doesn't feel like there's a protagonist in the sense that he doesn't change throughout the movie.
No.
It's just, who stole this diamond? Okay, that's who stole the diamond.
Exactly.
And, like, and it's just a series of bits. He doesn't really have any agency. He doesn't really solve the case. Like, when he goes to
he absolutely doesn't.
Yeah. He's just told to arrest that woman.
Right.
And, like, so then he's like, okay, I'm just going to go there. It's a lot of that. People, like, calling him and being like, go do this. And he's like, all right, I'll go do that now.
It's literally the most bare-bones vehicle for bits that you could have.
Yeah.
It's watching a bumbling idiot fail up.
Sure. Yeah, let's apply as much meaning to this as we can.
I don't want to put any meaning on it because it doesn't deserve meaning.
He's like your classic white guy failing up, taking advantage of his privilege.
In this room.
I mean, the other Sellers movie being there is basically that.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So maybe this is just a theme of Peter Sellers films.
In that one, it's like the point.
Yeah.
In this, we're supposed to root for him, but it makes every single arrest or every single, like, aha, feel unearned.
I don't even know if, are we, like, do you think we're supposed to root for him, or are we just supposed to, like,
Root for Mr. Bean.
We're just supposed to, like, want to watch him continue.
I think that's what Christopher Plummer's in this, right? Is because they wanted, like, a cool protagonist.
Right, they had to be like, well, somebody's got to do something in this.
Yeah, it's almost supposed to be an ensemble, but they forgot to make them all in the same, like, room most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like he's off doing bits somewhere else, and then they're off doing their thing.
It truly is like, they are all completely sealed off from each other. And like, and whenever we cut back to the chief, we're always like, oh, yeah, this guy's losing his mind.
He's still really angry.
This guy is like, he's like going to therapy and talking about how much he wants to kill him, and then he kills his therapist.
Yeah, shoots his nose off. He's becoming like a Batman villain slowly.
He truly is. Yeah. And then in the next movie, I have not seen it, Revenge of the Pink Panther, but I did. I was reading about it, and he basically does become a supervillain in that.
Okay.
Like, he breaks out of the insane asylum and like threatens the world with a literal laser.
So you know what I think this might have been an attempt at, and it's a weird comparison, but a Coen Brothers film.
Okay,
because in Coen Brothers films, they will often have separated elements that slowly become entangled with each other.
Yeah.
Okay, burn after reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm wondering if that's what what they were trying to do, is there's all these little things that are kind of interweaving and sort of causing each other, like, but not directly, and then they all are in this room together.
Right, they all converge
and everything just falls apart.
Man, that's that is a very generous reading.
It's an extremely generous. I'm not saying that's what they accomplished. I'm thinking that's what they were thought they were
doing. Man, yeah, I don't know. I really don't.
Honest to God, I could see that train of thought, though. Because literally, I'm fully thinking Burn After Reading now, where you have your bumbling idiot, your Brad Pitt type, although in this case it's Clouseau.
Peter Sellers is the Brad Pitt type.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Clouseau, like, the idea is he's indirectly causing a lot of things to happen along the way. Right.
He's, like, the catalyst for this weird married couple to, like, work out their issues, basically, is what it ends up being. Because the wife, spoiler alert for Return of the Pink Panther, the wife is Charles Lytton, the thief's wife, is the one who sold it. Who stole the diamond?
Surprise, surprise. The woman that's been a step ahead of Inspector Clouseau the entire time.
Yeah.
Who is the only likable character?
Oh, yeah. She's definitely the only one who I understood as a person.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. She's like a rich socialite who wishes her... It's set up early on that Christopher Plummer is extremely bored living his retired life. Because he's painting a picture that is literally just the words dull in different colors.
I want that painting.
I wonder if we could get that at auction.
All of them. And I want to line up my home with them.
Dull, dull, dull. I wonder. I really want to look now and see if we can find the Pink Panther painting.
I don't want to set up a Patreon that's for us to live. I want to set up a Patreon to get every single dull painting this Pink Panther movie.
Yeah, because, you know, they had the hero painting, and then they had, like, the stunt painting. And
they probably had a few extra just in case.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So some poor set designer had to make, like, 40 dull paintings for one shot.
It looks like it was mass-produced. It's just, like, words on a blank piece of paper, a canvas. So they've set that up, and she's, like, concerned for him because he's so bored. And so she decided to steal the diamond to spice up their marriage.
But she had already stolen it at that point, right?
I
guess she would have. But like, I feel like you have, you know, when they're a married couple, you know, you see things even before they're spelled out in the plot. So, you know.
I love it. They have the weird jewel thief thing where they're not going to go sell the diamond.
No, absolutely not.
It's the thing where they're just bored jewel thieves who just like to have the stuff.
It does seem like the world's largest diamond must be the most worthless diamond that you could possibly steal.
That's true, because who are you going to sell it to?
Exactly.
This movie makes Master of Disguise make sense.
Oh, yeah. That actually, I think that is literally what Dana Carvey, his whole career is trying to be Peter Sellers.
Oh, yeah, that checks out.
Because Peter Sellers is like a master, like a literal master of disguise guy. Like Dr. Strangelove, he's three characters in that movie. They all are completely different. And
yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's the kind of guy who liked to like dress up and be crazy characters and do all that. And that is kind of what Dana Carvey seemed to want out of his career.
Has that been successful for a while? Austin Powers feels like the last time an actor is able to pull that off.
I can't think of another more recent one. I guess the closest would be like Borat.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is that element, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
It's the humor that has to be updated.
Exactly, I mean, that first Austin Powers movie is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Because it was a regular bit. Like, I think Dave Chappelle did it in fucking Half-Baked as well. Like, it used to just be a thing comedians would do.
Right. Just like, invent a wacky character and then play different characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Eddie Murphy kind of drove it into the ground a little bit.
With Nutty Professor to Norbit?
Yeah, and like, that was his whole thing for a long time, was just doing like that.
I feel like the ones where the whole point of the movie is they have to play as many fucking characters as possible, and we're just flooded with it. It's like, it doesn't work. It has to be like when it's just like there's a regular movie around it.
Right.
Well, that's why Austin Powers worked.
Exactly.
Because it was a spy movie.
Yeah.
And it's at its core. It had a beginning to end.
It's stupid.
You knew what the villain wanted. We knew.
But yeah.
It's insane that we're actually legitimately talking about Austin Powers right now.
I love Austin Powers.
Well, not just that. On the show that I work on, a long-running bit has been, I made the answer to every movie Austin Powers. And I can't believe I'm actually doing it for real.
Well, there we go.
But The actual,
like, it's on purpose, Vanessa.
It's on purpose now. Wasting hours and hours and hours of work time is on purpose now. Whole, like, man out of time thing. Even the sequels, like, with the Scott character. Like, at least Austin Powers tried to have a story.
Oh, yeah,
this.
Absolutely. But no, that is, I guess, a step beyond what Return of the Pink Panther tries. It tries, I guess, but, like, it's so disjointed.
Yeah, does it? I don't know. Like, it's like, plot-wise, I guess it technically tries. It just doesn't try very hard.
Well, and it's just, like, what makes it feel so truncated is that both, like, what Austin Powers does, like, we're really good. I'm gonna stick with this Austin Powers comparison.
Oh, God.
What it does is it ties the humor into the plot. Like, the plot drives the humor and vice versa.
Even, I would argue, even, like, the Naked Gun movies, which are as absurd as the Pink Panther and are a series of bits, still have, like, an arc and, like, a plot. Even if the character arcs are simple, it still all kind of fits together.
Yeah, all of the details are stupid and comedic, but all of the plot is, like, just your basic boilerplate, like, cop conspiracy thing.
Like, I don't know what the characters... Like, it's that thing where, like... Clouseau, like, I don't know what he wants.
Right. No, exactly.
Like, what is his driving force?
Yeah.
He literally just wants to solve the crime. That's his whole thing.
That is a interesting French accent.
All of the French accents in this movie are garbage. And they like, point it out that they're like, garbage. They, like, his whole thing, like, for, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie, Clouseau's whole joke is that his French accent is weird. Like, there's no humor outside of, I guess the humor here is that he sounds funny.
People can't understand him.
Yeah.
You know what? I will say, having watched this and having actually recently watched the Steve Martin version.
Did you really? Why?
I had to. It was for a trivia thing. The Steve Martin version is at least redeemable in that the bits are strung together to form a story.
Sure.
And
I'll give it that.
I care more about Steve Martin.
Yeah.
I think maybe because maybe there might be, like, a nostalgia factor to it, but I will say it is slightly more redeemable.
Sure.
You look like I just committed an atrocity.
No, I mean, like, I understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree. It's just...
And he commits to
the punch
off. It's
just tough because those movies are fucking garbage.
There's more than one of those?
There are two... Steve Martin, Pink Panther movies.
Good God.
Yeah. They're not good.
I will say, this is a question for the both of you. Why do you think something like Airplane works and this doesn't? Because Airplane also, you can't really put the cohesive story together too much either.
Yeah. Well, no, I do think there's still a character arc there.
There's a character arc and there's a story arc. Like, even though, again, it is completely bare bones and nonsensical, like... There is a story to Airplane. Right. It's about the plane where there's a sickness that breaks out on board and how everyone deals with it.
And the main character he has the PTSD in it, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
And he develops that drinking problem. Yes. And then, like, they have the... And Naked Guns have this, too, where it's just a romantic subplot.
Right.
And it's like there's not much to it.
Yeah.
But there's, like, there's something there that you're like, okay, this is the progression of these characters.
Likeable characters who you can understand if not relate to. And, like, and I mean, you know, not to be, like, pithy, but, like, it's funny. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Airplane, like, even when it's making these stupid jokes that have nothing to do with anything, they're good jokes that land. And they don't take up a ton of time. That's, I think that might be the key flaw of the Pink Panther comedic set pieces.
It's, of course, going to be relative to whoever's watching it. Like, I appreciated a lot of the comedy bits in this, but a lot of them just didn't work, or they're just, like, so dated at this point that I'm like, you know, I've seen different versions of this, but I did, like, there were little puns and bits that I was just like, oh, I like that. Like, the guy who's like, can I take your coat, please, sir, and then, and your hat and your gloves, and then he just leaves with it.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's a fun bit.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing that made me legitimately laugh was the slipping on the sauna stuff, just because, again, there's no way to describe why that made me laugh. It's just the physical positions they were in doing that tickled something in me.
It's that classic slapstick thing.
You know what I will say? And I didn't realize until I checked the wiki just now.
Okay.
I had such trouble finding the plot that I just realized they never mentioned what happens to Lady Claudine.
Oh, yeah.
Ever?
No, not at all.
We do not. We know, Peter. We know.
I just assumed that she got away with it. That was kind of how I felt.
They give everyone else a wrap up. Cusseau's doing. We know he goes back. We know that other guy goes back to being a jewel thief.
Yeah,
the
tour guide doesn't even mention that she's the one who, like, they never mention. The tour guide doesn't say what.
We don't know if she goes to jail. Yeah. We don't know. We have no idea what happens to the most interesting character in the movie.
Yeah,
I legitimately think because of how it resolved in such a strange way with the police chief, we should say. The movie ends with the police chief tracking Clouseau to Lugash and shooting the Sharky.
Right, and that was news to me that he was the villain.
Yeah.
Because it was, again, they introduced the crooked cop guy who wants the diamond, shoot him both, and then the other guy who we've been watching as a bit.
Right.
And I was like, wait, these are the villains?
Yeah.
They
just enter in the last act, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think because it ended like that with Sharky being killed and everything, I think they just kind of slipped away.
You could argue that she's did a very good job because they're not even talking about her. But of course the movie is not talking like they could do something where they don't know about her. And then you can see her like in the end, like having, you know, like having a great time and just haven't gotten away with it. But you're right. Is that it's more like the writers were just like completely forgot about
like,
that
okay,
character.
We gotta wrap this up.
Yeah.
We've hit an hour and 50 minutes. We gotta roll it up
and
keep going.
She is I think the antagonist in the sense of if you think of it as like the antagonist as being the thing that makes the plot go,
yeah,
and makes the characters run around and do the thing that they need to do and make the changes that they're going to change.
But also like
she's the antagonist, but
she's not. But I mean, for one thing, she literally has nothing to do besides she's more just like the inciting incident that they have to resolve. Like,
well, she's kind of the puppet master later too. Like, she's drugging.
Yeah, yeah, Clouseau, she does drug Clouseau, but it really does seem like they're trying to just position Sharky as like the bad guy,
right?
I don't know. Yeah, it just kind of wraps up, and then there's another bit with Clouseau and Kato at where Kato's trying to attack him.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah.
More racism.
Vows revenge, and there's that great Don Mancini score.
Yeah, there's the great Don Mancini score. Yeah, and it does end with the chief in a psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
He's in a straitjacket.
Watching the credits roll.
Yeah, and he sees the pink... I think he might be the only character in the series who interacts with the cartoon Pink Panther.
Maybe he's the only self-aware person that knows what a danger Clouseau is if he gets out into the real world.
I'm not lying. I legitimately was like, yeah, no, I get where this guy's coming. I would also hate this guy if I were his boss.
Can we argue that this is like a world where like the Pink Panther is like the devil controlling all these events?
I think that is arguable.
Yeah, and then at the end, he's the only one who can see the strings being pulled.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like at the end of In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is very Lovecraftian. Like, I feel like Inspector Clouseau is this man's Cthulhu.
There's a lot of unknowable horror lurking in the background of this movie.
So it's like Coen Brothers meets Lovecraft.
Exactly. That's
exactly what this is.
I think that's the best way to sell people on Return of the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
It's Lovecraft meets Coen's.
With just a smidge of a... Hanna Rivera style slapstick.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. There's a dash. There's a couple scenes. Fucking terrific. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. This silly,
I'm glad
silly
we got
show.
To the bottom of this.
Right? Yeah, we really solved the mystery. We are like Inspector Clouseau in that way.
We must be stopped.
Yes, absolutely.
Where can the people find you, Dave?
Ah, geez. Well, on this network, I'm co-hosting Best Bad Movie with Tom Ryman.
All right.
We also have our own network called Gamefully Unemployed. You
Hell
can check us out on our Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts there, and you can see everything. It's
awesome.
Great.
Hell yeah. You can find me on at Nesgrit and all forms of social media. On Wednesdays, catch me on Screen Junkies Universe. And on Thursdays, catch me on El Rey Network and El Rey Nation.
Whew.
I'm tired all the time.
You can find me on Twitter at Hi There, Hi Dar. That's what I got going on right now. Thank you, as always, to Jorge Riverall for our artwork and Luke Ventress for our theme song. You guys fucking rock. And please remember to rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. You listen to other podcasts. Come on.
You know the protocol.
thank you so much for listening, and we love you guys. Bye.
Au revoir.